last parak in Maseches Yuma, where the Gemara basically tells us all of the halachos that we need to know to properly observe Yom Kippur. So we started off with the Chamesha Sinuyim, with the five prohibitions, the five restrictions that apply on Yom Kippur. Those are Achila Shtia, Sicha, Rechitza, Ne'ila Sasandal, Tashmish Hamita. You'll say that was six, that was not five. So the Gemara says Shtia and Achila are considered to be one category, and then the other four make up the list of five. We discussed the Machlokes HaRishonim, should we assume that these five inuyim, outside of eating and drinking, should we assume that the other ones are isurim d'araisa? Should we assume that those are actually minat Torah? Or should we assume that those are only midrabanan? Some Rishonim wanted to prove from the fact that the Mishnah lists, as we will see, the Mishnah says that there are some exceptions to the rule. A chaya, a woman who just gave birth, a melech, is allowed to wear leather shoes, is allowed to do certain things. How can they do that? If you look in the Pesukim and Chumash, it doesn't say everybody has to follow the laws of Yom Kippur except for X, Y, and Z. So doesn't that seem to be an indication that everything is only midrabanan? Other Rishonim said no. The Ran explains maybe all of them are daraisa. However, we assume that this is one of those examples of nimsar hadavar lechachamim, where the chachamim were given the power to identify what exactly the Torah meant when it said v'inisem es nafsho seichem. The Torah didn't give us the details. The Chachamim translated exactly what that means, and they applied it to the halachos as we know it. And once they applied it, once they extrapolated from the pasuk what exactly it means in our terms, that now is binding as a isur d'araisa. So that was the first thing we spoke about. We then mentioned that if you assume this is a mitzvah d'araisa or a mitzvah midrabanan, why do we not recite a bracha on the mitzvah of inui on Yom HaKippurim? The same way we recite a bracha on everything else. So there were those who wanted to say that the reason why you don't recite a bracha is because... what? Oh, so the real answer was because Shev Al Tasa, which is the simple answer, that whenever you're not actively engaged in a mitzvah, you don't recite a bracha. But we mentioned that there were others who suggested a very strange interpretation, but that was rejected. Then we moved on to the issue of Ne'ilas Hasanda last week, and the Machlokes HaRishonim there, like the Rambam writes, maybe we should assume that not only is one not allowed to wear leather shoes on Yom Kippur, but one is not even allowed to wear any kind of shoe that makes your foot comfortable while walking on the ground. Some Acharonim wanted to adopt the opinion of the Rambam and say that we should try our best on Yom Kippur not to wear anything that is going to make our feet comfortable. However, generally the accepted opinion in Shulchan Aruch is you're allowed to wear anything that is not leather because that was not included in the original Isser in the Torah. I was very surprised how many shilas I got this year on Tisha B'Av about people wanting to wear leather shoes. It was very surprising to me. A number of lawyers who wrote to me, they're going to court, and they need to work on Tisha B'Av, and they feel if they come without leather shoes, they're not going to be able to look presentable in front of the judge. I don't know. To me, it doesn't sound like it's something that we would allow. I'm not sure why we would. So then somebody wrote back to me last night, is it true that as long as you put them on after Chatzos, it's mutter? I told them I never heard of such a thing. I don't think it's true, but I'm not sure why it's so difficult for people to keep to the leather shoes, especially today where there are plenty of synthetic shoes or we have sneakers. It's not unusual for someone to hurt their feet and walk into court with sneakers instead of fancy leather shoes. I don't know what the big deal is. I don't know. You work in the DA's office. Is it something that you would dismiss somebody for walking in without leather shoes? Is it so unusual? No. So I'm not sure I really understand the issue. The next of the Chamesha Sinuim that we're going to talk about is what the Mishnah lists as Tashmish Hamita. That's what we're going to talk about tonight. When we talk about Tashmish Hamita, about a husband and wife having relations with one another, we need to talk about two different things. And the reason I want to get into this is because this has ramifications not only for Yom Kippur, but there are three times during one's year when potentially they can be prohibited from Tashmish Hamita. Time number one is Yom Kippur, obviously. That's what the Mishnah says. Time number two is Tisha B'Av, like we know, we just observed. Tisha B'Av is patterned off Yom Kippur. It's Midrabanan. And time number three is if a person, Rachmana Litzlan, a husband or a wife, is in the middle of Shiva. Those are the three times when we have a prohibition of Tashmish Hamita. And that includes not only Tashmish Hamita itself, but perhaps the Harchakos as well. And that's what I want to talk about tonight. This whole concept of Harchakos is not something that's just a Chumra Ba'alma. It's not something that was made up along the way. The concept of Harchakos when one's wife is Anida is something that has very firm roots in Chazal. So let's look at number one. Avister Abnasan, Perek Beis, where the Avister Abnasan tells us the following. Let's look, instead of looking there, by mistake I put it twice on the sheet. I put only the beginning of it and the beginning of the sheet, and the rest of it I put at the bottom. I'm not sure how that happened. So if you look at the bottom of the page, Asus Yagla Torah, right? Look at the bottom of the page, where we're told in the Mishnah that we have an obligation to make a Siyag LaTorah. Asay siag l'dvarecha, and you should also make a siag for your words. Kederach she'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu siag l'dvarav. Ve'adam harishon asa siag l'dvarav. Adam harishon also made a siag for himself. How do you find that the Torah makes a siag for itself? Skip to the second side of the page. Ezehu siag she'asa Torah l'dvara. How do you ever find that the Torah made a siag, the Torah made our hachaka, for something that we are not allowed to do? Says the Mishnah, Harehu Omer, Ve'al isha benidas tumasa lo sikra. When a woman is in her state of impurity, when she's in a state of nida, the husband is not allowed to come close to her. So what does it mean, you're not allowed to come close to her? So on a simple, basic level, it means they're not allowed to have tashmish hamita. But maybe it means more than that. Says the Mishnah, Yachol, you might think that while she's in the days of nida, yichabkena v'yinashkena, v'yidaber ima dvarim b'telim, you might think that at that time of the month, okay, so I'm not allowed to have tashmish hamita, but maybe I'm allowed to do other things, maybe chibuk, maybe embracing one another and kissing, and other things that draw them close to one another would be permissible. Tama lamar, says the pasuk, no. Lo sikrav means you're not allowed to come close, even if it's not an actual explicit act of tashmish hamita, it's still not going to be permissible. Yachol, you might think, tishan ima bibigadeha al hamita, you might think you're allowed to share a bed with one another, even though she's wearing clothing and you're wearing clothing, which in the times of the Gemara was unusual. People didn't have so many articles of clothing. When they went to sleep at night, covered themselves with a blanket, and that was it. They weren't wearing clothing. Says the Gemara, what if a person is wearing clothing and his wife is wearing clothing? Still, says the Gemara, you're not allowed to sleep in the same bed because it says, lo sikrav. Maisav adam echad. Here's a frightening story, which really is a story that comes from the Gemara Masechta Shabbos Daf Yud Gimel. So turn back, now I want to just take your attention away from this a little bit. Turn back, you look at number Gimel, it's a little out of order, I'm sorry, number Gimel, where we have a Gemara Masechta Shabbos Daf Yud Gimel. A frightening story, Tana Deve Eliyahu. What does Eliyahu Navi teach us? Maisa v'talmud echad shashana harbe v'kara harbe. There was a Talmud Chacham who was very learned, he knew the Mishnayos, he knew the Gemara, he knew the Psukim. So he dies, what would seem to be, very prematurely. She was going around with his pair of tefillin to every shul, to every Beis Medrash. And she was going to the people who were inside of those shuls and saying to them, "Ksiv b'Torah, doesn't it say, ki hu chayecha v'orech yamecha? Doesn't the Torah say that if you keep to the laws of the Torah, if you study the Torah, this is going to promise you a long life? Baali, my husband, Shashana Harbe, who learned a lot, Vikara Harbe, Vishimish Tamid Chachamim Harbe, he did everything right. Mipnei Ma Meis Bechatzi Yamav. How could it be that my husband died at such a young age? Why is that right? Doesn't the Torah say that Kihu Chayechem Ve'orechem Eichem, this is what's going to ensure that you have longevity? V'lo Haya Adam Machzira Dover. Nobody knew how to respond to her. Pamachas, says Eliyahu HaNavi, so here she was walking around having this question on God, how is it possible? Pamachas, one time, Nisairachti Etzla, I had the opportunity to stay in that home. And she was telling over to me how distressed she was over the fact that she was an almana, that she lost her husband at a young age. She went around to all the friends, she was asking, what is it that caused his death? And nobody was able to answer. Va'amartila, and I, Eliyahu HaNavi, got into a discussion with her, and I asked her, Biti, bimei nidut sayich mahu etzlach. When you were a nida, how was your relationship with him? What exactly did you do with one another? Amrali, she turns to me and she says, Chas v'shalom. What do you think? You think we violated the laws of nida? Afila be'etzbak tana lo nagabi. We didn't touch each other. We know that you're not allowed to do so during the days of nidus. So then he asks her, okay, so while you were having the actual flow, I know that you stayed away from each other, but mimei libunech, what about the days when you were counting the Shivanakiyim, when the Nida already had stopped? You didn't go to the mikveh yet, but you were still not tahora. Mimei libunech mahu etzlach. How did you act with one another when you were in the middle of Shivanakiyim before you went to the mikveh? So she says, I don't know, we acted normal. Achalimi, vishasimi, viyashinimi, vikir basar, we did everything. It never led to anything that it shouldn't have led to. We knew that until I go to the mikvah, I'm not allowed to be completely with him. But everything else we did do normally. Amarti la, Eliyahu Navi says, Baruch hamakam sheharago shalom nasa panam latorah. He deserved the death penalty. Now, this is a very extreme kind of statement. A person who doesn't keep to the harchakas deserves to die? Why do you deserve to die? What did I do? I may have violated an aveira. We all violate averas. So the Gemara is giving a very extreme story about Eliyahu HaNavi describing some great tzaddik. But from here, the Rishonim learn, it seems that this idea of Hachakos is something that already dates back to the times of the Gemara. And not only at the time when the woman is having the flow itself, but even afterward, until she actually goes to the mikveh, the Gemara says clearly, the laws of Hachakos will apply, and that's part of the Isser of Isha lo sikru legalo sarvasa. You're not allowed to not only have tashmish, but you're also not allowed to do anything that's going to be coming close to one another. And finally, we have a Medrash Rabbah number base here, where the Medrash says, Ha'isha nikra es gefen, a woman is referred to as a vineyard. As it says in the Pasuk, Eshtecha ki gefen paria, which is a play on the words, but that's what the Medrash says. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why does the Ribbono Shel Olam refer to our wives as a gefen? What does that have to do with a vineyard? So the Gemara says, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Al tomar don't say, Hova asuli lishtamish b'isha. Since the husband and wife are not allowed to have tashmish during the time when she's asura, hareni tofsa o megafafo o menashka ve'en liyavon. Okay, so I'll do everything else short of tashmish. Look, I'm married 20, 30, 40 years. It's not going to lead to anything. I want to show my wife some affection. Maybe I'm allowed to do that during this time period. Says the Medrash, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no. Kishem she'anazir she'nadir shelo lishtos yayin. The same way we find by a nazir who takes a promise on himself that he's not going to drink wine, not only do we say you're prohibited from drinking wine per se, but you're also not allowed to get near any grapes or any raisins or anything like that. And that's why a woman is referred to as a gefen, as a vineyard, because there are times when we say, not only do you have to stay away from the grapes, from the wine itself, which is the real iser, but we extend it and we say you're not even allowed to have grapes either, or any derivative of the grape, that would be part of the prohibition, because we don't want it to lead to something else. So to over here, says the Medrash, a woman, even though the ikar iser is lo sikru, really means legalo servasa, to have tashmish amita be made nudusa, that's when it's really a problem. However, we extend it as well to mean chibuk v'nishuk and other things that are going to lead you to that as well. Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like the halacha creates an exhaustive list, which creates the problem of tosif to a certain extent, or you're making a siyag v'torah which extends past what the woman had.
So you're asking two different questions. One is, well, how do we get all the examples that we keep to, right? You're saying we have this concept of hachaka, but we don't know exactly how to define what exactly that means. So let's say a very common question people ask now is, you know, a husband and wife are, you know, it's in the middle of the summer, it's very hot, and they want to do something. You know, half the month the wife is not going to be able to do everything with her husband, but they want to do other things. So very often we're asked the question, what about playing tennis? Is that like passing something from one to the other? I think that's a great question. How do we define what exactly is called passing? How do we define what's not? How do we define what's considered eating together and what's considered not? Very often this has to be reevaluated. That's a different question from the basic question, and that's really what I want to focus on. How do I have the right at all to make a hachaka? Where did this whole idea of hachaka come from? Asu siyag l'Torah means the chachamim want to come along and say that we are concerned. We want to set up a system where we don't want you to get into a problem of violating an isur kares, so we're going to set something up to make sure that we're going to guard you from doing that. How are we going to do that? We're going to say, not only b'mei nidusar, you're not allowed to have tashmish, which is the real iser, but you're also not allowed to do other things, which sometimes can be leading to that as well. But is that something that's a rabbinic prohibition? Is that something that's daraisa? Is that something that's derabanan? It would seem to be an indication from all of these sources that it's something that really can date itself back to the psukim. That what? It says, lo sikrivu. Lo sikrivu seems to be more inclusive. It doesn't just mean, don't do the act itself. It means you cannot do other things that are even close to the act as well. So that is a very important question. And we turn our attention to the Tashbeitz. You look at number Dalid, where the Tashbeitz, one of the Gedolei HaRishonim, is faced with the following problem. Do we ever find, and I think we've spoken about this in the past, but it's a very important theme to be aware of. The Tashbeitz talks about the possibility of having a mitzvah or an aveira in the Torah, which is only there as a safeguard. Meaning you have a mitzvah or an aveira in the Torah that's not an absolute iser. You're not allowed to eat basar b'chalav. Why not? Because God said you're not allowed to eat it. There doesn't have to be a why not. You're not allowed to eat non-kosher food. Why? Because God said you're not allowed to do it. So too over here, I would have said, every yisr in the Torah, you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara. Why? Is it only because it's going to hurt someone else? No, that's part of it. But I would say you're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara because it's an absolute. You're not allowed to speak Lashon Hara because God said you're not allowed to do that. So there are many Yisurim in the Torah. The assumption generally is, says the Tashbates, that an Yisur in the Torah, in order to be considered a prohibition, has to be absolute. It can't be contingent on something else. So look what he writes. Ra'isicha mischazek. He is responding to one of his friends. This is number Dalit. I see that you hold of the opinion, Shep, Prishas kohen gadol mi beso hi min haTorah. We have in the beginning of Maseches Yuma, where the Gemara says that before Yom Kippur, they used to separate the kohen gadol in order that he should prepare himself to go into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that he should be tahor, that he should be all ready to go. Says the Tashbates, what is that all about? That insistence that we have, that he separate himself, he not be with his wife, not with his family, he stays in the Beis HaMikdash 7 days leading up to Yom Kippur, what is that all about and where does it come from? So he says, one of my contemporaries felt that that is a mitzvah min haTorah. It's a mitzvah min deoraisa that a Kohen Gadol, as he's preparing for Yom Kippur, has to go and separate himself for 7 days. V'lo yafa ata osa bazeh. He says, I disagree with you. I don't think that's a mitzvah min haTorah. She'im min haTorah hi asura lo kol shiva. If you're really going to say that he has to separate himself from his wife min haTorah for 7 days, the Torah says you have to do that. Hayaloke ala. If he didn't follow the law, you would say he should get malchus. Same punishment you would get for violating anything else. V'lo manua bichlal halokim b'shumakom. And you go through the Gemara, you go through all of Shas, nowhere do you find where the Gemara lists in Maseches Makos, Elohein Alokin, these are the people that get Malkas, nowhere does it say, and the Kohen Gadol, 7 days before Yom Kippur, goes and lives with his wife, is going to be punished with Malkas. Doesn't say that. Why not? Says the Tashbates, because it's only Midirabbana. And then, V'hatalmud, secondly he says, V'hatalmud no sein tam, secondly he says, the Gemara Maseches Yuma, Davav writes, that the reason why we make a husband who's about to be doing the Avodah in Yom Kippur, in the Kodesh HaKadoshim, separate from his wife is because Shema Timsa Ishto Nida. It's because maybe we're concerned that his wife is going to become a Nida, and then she's going to end up touching him, and then he's going to be unfit to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash. Va'ata Omer ki min haTorah hu Asur. How can you tell me that that's an Issur D'oraisa? Issurim D'oraisa are not contingent on anything. They're absolute. And therefore he says, if the Torah would have said that the Kohen Gadol has to separate himself from his wife before Yom Kippur, number one, if he didn't do that properly, he would get Malkus. Number two, why does the Gemara say that the reason why he has to separate is because maybe his wife is a Nida? What do you need a reason for? Torah says it's Aser, means it's Aser. Torah says you have a mitzvah to do this, means you have a mitzvah to do it. What's the reason? Who cares what the reason is? Ve'ein haTorah oseras mishum shema. He says the Torah doesn't talk in uncertain terms. The Torah never says, oh, don't do this because maybe something's going to happen. No. Ve'ein isura Torah ela isurin kivuin. V'chal makam shenos nintam shema, he says, this is a code word. Whenever the Gemara uses that formulation of shema, maybe something else is going to happen. That's a clear indication that what we're dealing with is only egzera midirabanan mishum asu mishmeres l'mishmarti. So says the Tashbates, the guiding principle always is, whenever you're learning a piece of Gemara, and you come across something where the Gemara says, well, what's the reason for this? Well, Shema, we're concerned, maybe it's going to lead to that. Says the Tashbates, that's already a clear indication without knowing anything else, that what we're dealing with at worst is only an Issur D'Rabbanan. Because if it was an Issur D'Oraisa, Issurim D'Oraisa are not contingent on anything else. They're absolute on their own. So that's what he writes. You look at the next one here, which is the very next tshuva in the Tashbates, Siman Kuf Lamed Vav, where he writes the same thing. He says, okay, I wrote my letter. My friend responded to me that, what are you talking about? I looked around the Chumash itself, and you see in the Psukim that the Chumash says, don't do this because of that. For example, what does it say? A melech is not allowed to marry too many wives because lo yasur levavo, because then his mind is going to be distracted from doing what he has to do. He's going to be too busy taking care of his wives and buying their clothing and doing whatever has to be done for them. He's not going to be able to do the job that he's asked to do. Don't you see that that's a isser in the Torah that's not absolute? Don't you see that's an isser in the Torah that is contingent on something else? Ve'hevesa, and you brought proofs. For example, pen yachtiu, pen yosef, lo yasir levavo, lo yashiv, kulam edei sheker heim. He says, don't bring me any of these proofs, I don't want to hear them. They don't mean anything. Now, how do you explain what they mean? Ve'hano lav yiseri ninu, l'chai v'lav b'shnei lav. No, that's just the Torah trying to emphasize the lav. It's not really the real. He tries to wiggle out of it. It's a wiggle. Not so clear why he's right. But he says, this is the guiding principle. Whenever you come across anything which is not absolute, wherever the Torah says, or wherever the Chachamim say, don't do this because it might lead to that, that's a clear indication that we're only dealing with an Issa D'Rabbanan. And therefore he says, back to his point where he started, when the Gemara, Maseches Yuma Daf Vav, writes that a Kohen Gadol has to be Porish Me Ishto for 7 days before Yom Kippur, because Shema Timsa Ishto Nida, maybe his wife is going to turn out to be a Nida, and then she's going to be Metame him, and then he's going to be unfit to do the Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash, says the Tashbetz, that's a clear indication that we're dealing with an Issa D'Rabbanan, because if it was the Raisa, it wouldn't matter what the reason was. Why? What do you mean? And by the wife also? Right. It's the second party coming in.
To be tamay, right?
Okay.
So the issue for him is become tamay. The only way he became tamay is from a second person. Versus Penyasu Lavavo is, that's a result of him doing something wrong.
Same thing. Why is that not analogous
one
to...
One is a result of him doing something.
Okay.
Versus somebody else affecting his actions.
Both of them are someone else affecting. One is where you have the Melech marries too many wives, and now that he enters another wife into his life, his mind is going to be on her, not on what he's supposed to be doing. Same thing as over here. Now that he's going to be spending time with his wife before Yom Kippur, she's going to invalidate him.
Well, one is the cause and one is the effect, though.
Okay, but they bring to the same result, that you can't do the job he's supposed to do.
As a result of the cause, but...
It brings about the same problem. So take another, he brings a bunch of examples here. Each one of them you have to look at carefully, but this is the guiding principle that he has. Now, Rabbi Yosef Engel, who was one of the great Gedolim in Krakow, he was the Av Beis Din in Krakow, he was the rabbi in Krakow in Poland, and he wrote a number of very beautiful svarim, one of them called Lekach Tov, which is a Lekach Tov, now became a very nice sefer of Vert Lachan Chumash, but the original Lekach Tov was not that at all. The Lekach Tov is a sefer which is... I don't know exactly how to explain it. It's like Klalei Ashas. It's like a number of, like probably 15 or 20 pieces in there, and each one of them like goes through a mastery of all of Shas and gives you an insight into many, many different sugyas. So here, Rabbi Yosef Engel takes on this major issue and he says, "Imatzinu siyag b'daraisa." Do we ever find such a thing as a siyag, as the Torah itself, giving us an iser only because it's concerned that maybe it's going to lead to something else? Not because the Torah thinks this is so bad itself, but because the Torah is concerned, maybe if you do this, then it's going to lead to that. First source that he quotes is, Harchakus, where we just read in the Avos D'Rabbanan, what does it say? That not only is a husband not allowed to be with his wife and have Tashmish Amita in a time of Nidus, but also you're not allowed to have other kurva as well. You're not allowed to be close with her. You're not allowed to do chibuk v'nishuk, and we have all kinds of archakas that apply as well. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, doesn't that seem to be a clear indication that the Torah itself set up a system where it asserts something, not because chibuk v'nishuk is so terrible, but because we're afraid maybe it's going to lead to something else? Isn't that clear? Number two, he writes, turn to the second side of the page, number Vav, where the Rian writes in Maseches Psachim, Taf Aleph Amid Aleph, as follows. Why is it, asked the Ran, that over here, by Bedikas Chametz, we find something that is so unusual? Why do we find by Bedikas Chametz that you have to go, not only destroy the Dabar HaAser, but you have to go search after it, you have to go to such lengths to make sure there's no Chametz in your house? Why is Chametz so unusual? So you'll say, well, Chametz is an Isser Karis. True, but there are other Isser Karis also. So what's this all about? What? What? So says the Ran as follows. Masha Yitzrichu Chachamim B'dika B'chametz Yosem Rebi Shari Surim. Why don't you say, anybody who has a non-Jew in their house, let's say some people have housekeepers or whatever, maybe I have to go do B'dika every night in the house to make sure they didn't leave any tray for crackers around the house. We don't do that. Why not? Maybe they brought, I don't have any problem if they bring their own food into the house. I just don't want them using my kitchen to heat it up. But I don't have a problem if they bring their own cookies, their own crackers. Do I have to go every night with a flashlight checking around the kitchen to make sure there's no crumbs anywhere that were left over from her tray for cookies? No, I don't have to do that. Why not? Says the Ran. Why don't I have the same thing by Shari Surim below some chol abitul? What? Why? Why are you allowed to have non-kosher food in the house and you're not allowed to have chametz in the house? Oh, so that's what the Ran is asking. Is the Isser Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh an absolute Isser, or is Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh perhaps contingent on the fact that you're not allowed to eat chametz? And that's what we're going to see. This is a big chiddush of the Ran, but let's see what he says. Kvar Kasavti, he says, the reason why the Chachamim said that you have to go along and do a bedika here, it's not good enough to just get rid of the chametz. Why do you do bedika? She'asu kein, kedei lakayim mitzvahs tashbisu. Because we have a mitzvah in the Torah of tashbisu sarmi batechem. The only way to destroy the chametz is if you actually find it. If you don't go looking for it, you won't find it. Okay. She'chashushu lebnei adam shelo yivalu b'machshavtan lagamri. Yes, it's true, I could be mevatel all of my chametz and say it doesn't belong to me, but come on. You have a whole house full of chametz. How many people are really being mevatel it? And therefore, says the Ran, because they were concerned, I'm not really going to be mevatel it. I don't really want anyone coming into my house and clearing out the pantry. I want to be able to eat that chametz after Pesach. Therefore, he says you have to do a bedikas chametz and actually get rid of it. V'im ata omer she'chashashu shelo yavel achlo k'divri harishonim. Hainu taima dechashu be'tvei mi b'shari surim. So why are we more concerned here than by anything else? Let's say I have a place in my house which is designated with a sign on it that says, this is the babysitter's food, all of it is non-kosher, please don't touch it. How come that's not a problem?
Not yours.
It's not mine. What about chametz on Pesach in my house? Also not mine, it's hefker. So why can't I put up a sign that says, this chametz doesn't belong to me because once Pesach... What? Why are you afraid I'm going to eat it? If I put up the same sign I would put up for my babysitter's food? Oh, says the Ran. Why is it worse? Mishim de chametz lo bedili in shimine kulishata. Because chametz, I'm used to eating all year long. I'm not going to remember these 7 days, these 8 days of Pesach. I have to remember not to touch the cabinet. Treif of food we know we stay away from all the time. Chametz is something we have a more difficult time staying away from because chametz is something that we're very used to. The chamer yisuri tvei. The is... Bay karis. He says two reasons. Number one, because chametz is punishable with karis. Non-kosher food is not punishable with karis. Non-kosher food is just punishable with a lav. That's malchus. That's number one. Number two, he says the difference is, chametz is something that we're used to eating all year long, and therefore we got to go above and beyond to make sure we don't eat it. Get it out of your house. Not good enough just to say we're going to put up a sign. You have to actually get rid of it from your house. However... Oh, so some ask, what about Yom Kippur? I lo b'dili in shiminei on Yom Kippur. So the answer that some give is because Yom Kippur, everybody's so afraid of Yom Kippur, Emes Adin, something like that. I forgot, the Rishonim asked the Kasha, how come you don't have to do b'dikas ha-food on Yom Kippur because you're not allowed to eat? What? Exactly. Sometimes I think the Rishonim says that, then on Shabbos, Emes Shabbos alav. Sometimes people have an Emes of Shabbos and that's what we assume they're going to follow the rules. So Yom Kippur also, maybe that's the same. Here says the Ran, now here's the Chiddush, ve'epsher od. Shemepnei tamzeh, he says, because we're concerned of the fact that chametz is number one an isser karis, and number two, people are so used to eating chametz all year long and handling the chametz and having a relationship with chametz, now you're going to tell them for 7-8 days they're not allowed to have anything to do with it. Because of that, he says, hechmira hatorah bo laver alav b'bayirah b'yimatzeh, says the Ran. Maybe that's why the Torah here says b'yirah b'yimatzeh. Never anywhere else do we find b'yirah b'yimatzeh. Doesn't say you're not allowed to have the treif of food in your house. Just says don't eat the treif of food. Why over here, specifically, does the Torah say we have an Isra of Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh, you're not allowed to find chametz in your house at all? What's the problem? I'm not going to eat it. Says the Ran, because we're concerned, you will come to eat it. Now the indication of the Ran is, the only reason why the Torah says there's an Isra, there's a prohibition of Bal Yirah Bal Yimatzeh on Pesach, is because we're concerned that you're going to take it a step further and violate something far worse. Says Rabbi Yosef Engel, don't you see that the Ran maintains, Ran is one of the most prominent Rishonim, don't you see that he maintains that when you have an Isser in the Torah, not always is the Isser in the Torah absolute, sometimes the Isser is only because it's a hachaka, because we're concerned it's going to lead to something which is worse. Furthermore, the Kesem Mishnah writes, I didn't put it on here, but the Kesem Mishnah writes, we find that the Torah says a number of times, Lo savasha gadiba chalevi milk, you're not allowed to cook meat and milk. Why do we need it to say three times? Says the Gemara, one is for achila, one is for Hana, and one is for Bishul. Says the Kesem Mishnah, why are you not allowed to be Mevashel Basar Mechalev? What do you care if I cook Basar Mechalev? In fact, there was a Shiloh there, Rav Soloveitchik was asked by somebody, I think it was in culinary school, that they ask you to do all kinds of different recipes. You don't have to taste them, but you have to make them. So Rav Soloveitchik said he discussed with his father, I think, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik, I don't remember the details, but he definitely was asked a Shiloh about whether we should assume that somebody in culinary school who's asked to put together a recipe of Basar Mechalev, they have no intention on eating it at all. I think the ingredients are nauseating to me. I'm not interested in eating it, but for whatever it is, we're trying to make something, and this is what the teacher instructs me to do. Am I allowed to cook the basar b'chalav in such a case, even when there's no intent of anyone eating it? Or do you say, no, that's part of the prohibition of lo savasho gedi b'chalav imo? So here the Kesem Mishnah says, the whole prohibition of lo savasho gedi b'chalav imo, of cooking the basar b'chalav, is only because of ahachaka shelo yavel ochel mimenu. Which is a chiddush. Where does he get that from? But that's what the Kesem Mishnah says. The reason why the Torah emphasizes that you're not allowed to cook basar b'chalav is because we're concerned maybe you're going to come to eat the basar b'chalav. So now, says Rabbi Yosef Engel, if you take that, plus he has another Yalkut Shemoni where the Yalkut Shemoni writes, why do we have this idea of Tosefes Shabbos? Where does that come from? I have enough that I keep 24 hours of Shabbos. What do I need to start adding to the beginning, to the end? You know, those short Friday afternoons when you get home from work at 3:45, I would appreciate not having Tosefes Shabbos. It would be easier if I would be able to take in Shabbos when I'm supposed to take in Shabbos. What do I need the headache of Tosefes Shabbos? Says the Yalkut Shemoni, the reason why is because human beings have a very difficult time really figuring out the proper zman. Now, today we have a very easy time figuring it out, but back in the days, they had a very difficult time knowing exactly what the proper zman for Shkia was, and therefore that's where the concept of Tosefes Shabbos came from. Because the Torah was concerned that somebody's going to make a mistake and actually violate the laws of Shabbos when it really counts, therefore we said you have to start a little earlier in order to save yourself from violating that prohibition of being Mechala Shabbos. So all of these examples and many, many more of Yosef Engel collects and many others for him collect. My father writes some for him, Rav Soloveitchik. But it seems to be that the Tashbetz, in his principle, is not so 100% accepted. It seems that there are many indications that we do have such a concept as a hachaka that is really rooted in the Torah itself. And one of those examples will clearly be the hachakas by Gilui Arayos. The hachakas by an Isha Nida, that we assume that is something that is not just an idea that came around later on. It's not just a concept that came later on. It is something that has roots in the Torah itself. Now back to your question, when did all of these harchakas actually come about? Let's say, when you say that the Torah says, lo sikrivu legalus erva, includes more than just the act of tashmish itself, well, does that mean the Torah included all the things that we know today? Let's say, eating from the same plate, or drinking from the same cup, or all these things. Is that really true, or are those just added later on? Maybe the Torah just said, you know what, we're going to make a very simple harchaka. We don't want you to lead to tashmish. Normally, what leads to that is not eating from the same plate. Come on, that's 35 steps removed from getting into bed with this woman, right? So maybe that's a chumrah that came later on, but certainly chibuk v'nishuk is something that is very much directly related to tashmish amita. So there are, maybe if we were having hilchos nidashir, we would talk about where the development of all the harchakas came from, but certainly in principle, there are a number of them that are very relevant to the pasuk itself. Lo sikrivu means we include a lot more than just the act of tashmish. So now let's bring ourselves back to where we started, and that is, we are learning, for those who remember, Maseches Yuma. In the end of Maseches Yuma, the Gemara has a discussion about all the chameshes inuim that we have to be careful about on Yom Kippur. We mentioned that there are three times in the year when potentially a person could be prohibited from the act of tashmish. When we say that we have three times in the year when a person is prohibited, number one, Yom Kippur, number two, Tisha B'Av, number three, Rachmana Litzlan, a person has avelus, either you or one's wife, a man or a woman, the laws of Tashmish Hamita apply as well. When we say that, how far do we extend the prohibition of Tashmish Hamita? And this is a question that people very often don't realize when it comes to Tisha B'Av, when it comes to Yom Kippur. Maybe the harchakas are included in that as well. Now, this is a very interesting question. And it's a problematic question because somebody asked me this week, their mother-in-law is at the very final stages of her life, unfortunately. It doesn't seem there's going to be much time. His wife is a very super emotional person. And he said to me, my wife is on the pill. She's not going to have a period. We're not concerned about that. But he said, I know that Tashmish Amita is usher at this time, but should we assume that Chibuk V'Nishuk is also? Should we assume that the other hachakas also apply? It's a question, actually, to be honest, I never thought of it. I never looked it up. And I had to look it up this week, which got me thinking more about this whole issue. So the truth is, in the Ramah, I have to look a little more, and that's why I don't want to talk too much about an Avil, because I didn't look enough from the simple research that I did in the Ramah where it's supposed to be. Now, it could be there's a Ramah somewhere else where it's not supposed to be that I have to look at also, but from the Ramah and Hilchos Avelus, it would seem that, number one, an Avil is Aser B'Tashmish Hamita. That we know. The Gemara says that in Moed Katan, that's one of the Isurim that an Avil has upon themselves. Not only do we assume an avel is not allowed to engage in tashmish hamita, but we assume an avel, even at the times when they're not being noig avelus, also is not allowed to do tashmish hamita. For example, when you have somebody who loses a relative on a yomtiv, and the kvura happened on a yomtiv. So now they're all done, but the shiva is not going to begin the count until after yomtiv is over. We have such stories every so often. So when you have a case like that, the Ramah says explicitly that all of the yisurim dvarim shebetzina, meaning tashma shamita, which happens in private, we assume, would apply even at the time when the shiva count has not yet started. So that's with regard to tashma shamita itself. What about when we're talking about the harchako? So the Ramah writes in Yeredeya, Simon Shin Sadites, which is where it's supposed to be, it would seem to be, that chibuk v'nishuk is not permitted either. So he says, avol chibuk v'nishuk yesh lahachmir. The Ramah says, one should be careful not to be engaged in chibuk v'nishuk either, because we're assuming maybe that will lead to something else, the same way by anida we have a prohibition of chibuk v'nishuk. Now the Mechaber qualifies the statement and he says, avol b'shar dinei kurva, all the other things that generally apply during nidus, for example, you're not allowed to make the bed, you're not allowed to turn on the water for her, you can't pour the cup for her, you can't drink from the same cup. He says we don't have to take it that far. After all, this is just avelus. It's not really Yom Kippur. We're not, the consequence is not as high. What you might violate is not as bad. And therefore, he says we don't have to take it that far. But from the simple, basic level of what the Ramah says, and I'm being honest, I didn't check and all the further svarim to see if this is actually what we accept, and that's why I don't want anyone relying on this. What? Of course, Avelus is only Durabanan, that's true. But the Ramah says, although it's only Durabanan, therefore we're going to knock out all the other hachakas, but he says, Chibuk v'nishuk yesh lahachmer. Now what does yesh lahachmer mean? Someone's wife is falling apart and having an emotional meltdown. Not sure you would say that the Ramah's yesh lahachmer applies. I don't know, I have to look into it. But what I do know is when it comes to Yom Kippur and Tisha B'Av, there's a very explicit discussion about that, and that's something people might not be aware of. When it comes to Yom Kippur, let's look at the Shulchan Aruch. Number Zion, where the Shulchan Aruch writes, Yom HaKippurim Aser B'Tashma Shamita. Says the Mechaber, on Yom Kippur, the husband and wife are not permitted to engage in Tashma Shamita. V'Aser Liga B'Ishto Ki'ilu Hinida. Not only do we say the act of Tashmish itself is not permissible, but we assume also that one's wife takes on the status of Anida, even if she's Tahora. Even if she's Tahor, we assume she takes on the regular rules of Anida, v'chein aser lishon im ishto b'mita. So Yom Kippur night, says the Mechaber, one is not allowed to be engaged in any activities with one's wife, the same way by the state of Nidus, one would have the same prohibitions. Now says the Magen Avram, v'aser liga, af bayom, says the Magen Avram, even during the day, the husband and wife are not allowed to touch each other, because he says that we're concerned that she's considered like a nida, that's what the Mechaber says, and because she's considered like a nida at this time, therefore we assume you have to treat her with all those regular laws that would govern the laws of nida. That's what the Magen Avraham writes with regard to Yom Kippur. The problem is, when it comes to Tisha B'Av, it doesn't seem to be the same thing. Look at the Shulchan Aruch on the bottom, number Tes, where the Shulchan Aruch says in Hilchos Tisha B'Av, Yesh Misha Omer, Shelo Yishon Beleil Tisha B'Av Im Ishto B'Mita, that on the night of Tisha B'Av, when we have, one of the prohibitions is you're not allowed to be engaged in Tashmish Amita, says the Mechaber, you're not allowed to either sleep in the same bed. V'nachon Hadavar, and the Mechaber says it makes sense, Mishum Leich Leich Amrinon L'Nazir, because we would tell a Nazir, don't go near the vineyards, maybe you're going to accidentally eat something and that's going to lead you to drink something that you're not supposed to drink. Same over here, says the Mechaber, we would tell a husband and wife on Tisha B'Av night that they shouldn't be sleeping in the same bed, they should keep the harchakas, because we're assuming maybe it will lead to something far worse. Now, over here says the Magen Avraham, ve'efshur shelo yiga ba'kamo b'yom ha'kippurim, he says, not only do we say lo yishon imam b'mita, because that might really lead to something worse, however, says the Magen Avraham, you're not even allowed to touch one another, v'nir ali, says the Magen Avraham, de'biyom efshur lahakil, when it comes to Tisha B'Av day, you're allowed to be mekel. You're allowed to engage with one another. Why? Why should there be a distinction? And the answer is not because this is Daraisa and that's the Rabbana, because what difference should it make? Yom Kippur, you take your mind off tshuva. What do you mean? Tisha B'Av, you're going to take your mind off the Avelus. It's not the same. So he doesn't say after Chatzos. After Chatzos would have been an answer. Maybe after Chatzos not so bad, but he says here it seems the whole day it's mutter. So the Shaar HaTzion says it's simple, it's obvious. Difference is that on Tisha B'Av, everyone looks like terrible. The women aren't wearing makeup, right? You're not supposed to put on makeup on Tisha B'Av. Why not? Yom Kippur, they put on makeup the night before. They look nice when they come to shul, all dressed up with jewelry, right? So Yom Kippur, he says, everybody comes all their stuff. By the way, I think the Rishonim, right, the reason why we lay in the Parsha of Arayus on Yom Kippur Tisha, I'm sorry, on Yom Kippur by Minchas, because all the women are dressed up. You're going to have a break in the middle of the day, and maybe someone's going to have some here or there that they're not supposed to have. How could it happen on Yom Kippur? The answer is, okay, everybody gets dressed up. You never know what happens. So, says the Sharatian, it's very simple. There is a distinction between Tisha B'Av night and Tisha B'Av day. Tisha B'Av night, when the husband and wife are going in the bedroom together and the lights are off, you never know what it's going to lead to. Therefore, he says, that follows the same rules as Yom Kippur. And we say the harchakos apply. You have to make sure to stay away from each other because you don't know what's going to happen. Tisha B'Av day, he says, when the wife rolls out of bed and she's not wearing any makeup and she's not getting dressed up because she's going to be sitting on the floor all day and not wearing her nicest clothing, you don't have to worry about it. There's nothing to be concerned about. You think just because you engage in some harchaka, you think that that's going to lead to something that's far worse? Nah, come on, that's unreasonable. However, by Yom Kippur, he writes, by Yom Kippur, where the husband and the wife are both dressed up nicely for Yom Tov, after all, Yom Kippur is a Yom Tov. Therefore, he says, there's more reason to be concerned, and that's when the Magen Avraham adopts the opinion of the Mechaber, which is that the Arachakos do apply, and they apply not only Balayla of Yom Kippur, but they apply even by Yom of Yom Kippur. So you're going to take a walk with your wife on Yom Kippur during the break. Many people, you see them walking in the street holding hands together. It's very nice. It's a wonderful thing, but perhaps the Arachakos might apply then. We have to figure out which Arachakos apply. Should we assume all of them apply? Should we assume only Chibuk Benishuk might apply? I'm not exactly sure, but just something to consider. It's something, to be honest with you, I never thought about, and that's why I looked into it, only because this person called me this week about the Shiloh about Avelis, whether or not his, so far his mother-in-law is still alive, so I told him it's not relevant yet. But hopefully by the time I told him, I'll have enough time to look into it properly and know the right answer. But this is something that is relevant to what our Mishnah says of Tashrish Amita being a prohibition on Yom Kippur, that we assume it's not only a prohibition itself, but perhaps the Shulchan Aruch and the Rishonim extend it much further, and they say the Harchakas would apply on Yom Kippur, on Tisha B'Av, and during Avelis.